Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast here on a Thursday. Dan Lobby, Mary Kay Cabot, Ashley Bastock. We took you through every single draft pick on Wednesday. So we looked at the guys that they were bringing in. By the way, just a heads up, Tim Bielik and Lance Risen will join us on Friday to give their takes on all of the draft picks. So if you're subscribed, you'll get that right in your feed. But stay tuned for that tomorrow. But today we're going to look at the roster post-draft. We're going to look at the non-draft picks and sort of where we stand with these new additions, what we like and what we don't like, an area of the roster we feel really comfortable with, and an area of the roster we still have questions about. Let's start on the positive side. Mary Kay, what part of the roster right now, post-draft, are you most comfortable with for the Browns?
That's a good question because
I should say, like, we want to keep position groups, yeah, just so everyone knows. So which position group are you most comfortable with after the draft?
There are so many position groups right now that I think are just so well stocked. And I think you could name right now 5 or 6 positions that you can honestly say they've got it going on there. And for sake of this pod, I think maybe I'll just start with the defensive tackle position. They just went with Mike Hall. They already were well set at the position with a number of guys. They had already signed Quentin Jefferson. They already had Delvin Tomlinson, their big acquisition from last year, at the nose. They drafted Siaki Ika last year in the 3rd round. They re-signed Shelby Harris, Maurice Hurst. Bit of a crowded room, but that's what Jim Schwartz is going to want, to roll those guys through there, to maybe give Mike Hall Jr. a little time to come up the learning curve and figure it all out. But that is now a position that they're going to have everything that they need right there to be very successful.
I didn't think we'd go defensive tackle first. I like this. I like this room. That wasn't one of the ones that was on my list. I have a couple other that I would put on here. But I like that we start with defensive tackle. And the name I kind of want to talk about, we spent a lot of time on Mike Hall. But, Ashley, we've talked a little bit about this addition, and I think it's been sort of an under-the-radar addition. But I could see us in October or November thinking, like, man, this was a really good signing. And that's Quentin Jefferson. He's got let me count up here, 16 sacks in the last three years. He's sort of bounced around a little bit, but this guy just feels like a Jim Schwartz defensive lineman. He can play all over the place. I feel like if they had to play a game tomorrow, he'd be the starter next to Dalvin. I really think this could be one of those signings that, again, we're sitting there in October or November thinking, man, that was a really, really good signing. And it's one of the reasons that this is a position of strength here.
I'm really curious to see what he's going to look like when he gets out on the field, just because of those sack numbers. You know, I think he gets overlooked almost, or he has gotten overlooked so far this offseason, I think for a couple of reasons. I think mainly because of really good D tackles around the league and their prices and their contracts that they got, guys like Chris Jones and Christian Wilkins, of course. But I do think also with him, he's a journeyman, basically. And it's easy to get overlooked, I think, when you're in that position. But the sack numbers are really interesting. He's another veteran guy. I mean, we saw the value that Shelby Harris had coming in and just being a veteran. And, you know, he's a guy, for example, where it took him a few years in his career to get going. And he kind of found that sweet spot and has been able to have some longevity in the league. So I definitely think there's some good depth there. And between him, between Mike Hall, you know, I think they have enough pieces to replace Jordan Elliott. And, you know, even Jordan didn't have, obviously, a ton of sack numbers or sack production that we have been hearing about for 2 years that they were expecting him to get. And then he walks in free agency. So I'm excited for the new page of this. And even though Quentin's been overlooked, I think the sack numbers alone are really intriguing.
Yeah, Mary Kay, he played 50% of the defensive snaps his last 2 years, 2022 in Seattle and 2023 with the Jets. So he was only on the field like half the time with those two teams. And he had 5.5 sacks in Seattle and 6 with the Jets. So this is a guy that gets to the quarterback and brings him down.
Absolutely. And that is the 100% thing that they are looking for from that position right now. So he is a perfect fit. And I'll tell you what, Six sacks from an interior position? That's a whole lot of sacks. And we are not supposed to talk about sacks. I realize that. But guess what? They do matter. One of these days, maybe we'll do a little analytics post or piece on what a sack does to a drive. I've seen some numbers related to that. Nothing super crazy recent, but sacks do impact a drive very negatively for the offense. So I would like to look at that because that way we could say, oh yes, sacks do matter. But we know, of course, in the case of Mike Hall Jr., they're more interested in right now in the pass rush win rate and those kinds of things. But I'm sure they will take those six sacks by Quentin Jefferson any day of the week. Now, I haven't looked up his pressures. I don't know if you can do that real quick, maybe Dan, while we're talking, or I can, but
I was actually looking it up just now. So he had 29 pressures last year with the Jets in 14 games, which is top 50 in the league. And again, this is a guy that didn't play. He played 50% of the snaps. So I don't imagine he was going to end up real high, but yeah, I mean, he was in the top 50 among interior pass rushers or interior defenders, according to PFF, at least.
Yeah. And that's really, really good. And he has shown consistency in that kind of disruption. So it wasn't like he had a bunch of sacks one year and never had them any other year. As you mentioned, in his last 3 years alone, he has had 16. So it went up from 4.5 to 5.5 to 6.0. So he knows how to get there. And then you plug him into this defense and he's surrounded by the guys that he's going to be surrounded by. And he could even increase that number. Now, from an age standpoint, I think he's one of our older dudes, but
yeah, he's in his 30s. He just turned 31 in March.
But still, he's shown no signs of slowing down to this point. And I do think that if the season started tomorrow, that he probably would be the starter in there next to Dalvin. He got a nice contract in the offseason, a nice free agent contract, and he's got the experience. So I think it's a really good pickup.
And one more stat just from PFF. This isn't the stat that most people cite when they talk about pass rush win rate. They usually use, it's usually not PFF's stat, but they have a stat called win percentage, which is basically the same thing. It was 14. I was just in that detail. And pass rush win percentage. So, pressures, top 50, sacks, like we mentioned, good. And then that pass rush win percentage, at least on PFF. What do you feel good about here after the draft?
I'm going to go with a position group that really, they haven't added anyone new here, but I think it kind of goes to show the production of the unit last year. I'm going to go with safety. I think obviously the big move in that room was re-signing Grant Delpit during the season. And I like the fact that they brought Rodney McLeod back. I think Rodney was a key leadership voice on this team. Everyone knows he's a Jim Schwartz guy. He understands this defense and Jim's philosophies like the back of his hand. And I think for the most part, even though we saw this room hampered with injuries last year, Grant has his groin injury that ended up being season ending, probably wouldn't have technically been season ending if they had made it to the divisional round. It sounds like he was going to play. Rodney McLeod's season ends with a torn bicep. Juan Thornhill's dealing with a calf injury all year, so he doesn't really produce like that. But then they were able to throw in two undrafted guys in De'Anthony Bell and Ronnie Hickman. And, there were some tough plays, I think, for Ronnie, especially in that Houston game. But for the most part, when you look at their whole body of work, they produced and did some good things. And I think the fact that the Browns could afford to throw two undrafted guys in there at times, it showed a lot about the development of that room and the production and how everyone in that room really seemed to gravitate to, hey, in this defense, we're not going to have a true free and strong safety necessarily all the time. Guys have to know how to move around. I think they did a really good job of preparing them for that in the offseason. And I think the key here is Grant took the step that everyone thought he would. Everyone thought Grant Delpit would be amazing in this Jim Schwartz defense. And he was. He used that strength, that speed, he showed off, I think, all the really great parts of his athleticism last year. So now it's just about him coming back from that groin injury. Again, we know he was really close to coming back last year during the playoffs and just probably was a couple days away from what Andrew Berry has said in the past. So I'm really excited about them, even though they didn't add anything there. I think they didn't really need to, quite honestly.
This was also not a position I had on my list, but I do have questions about this position. And because obviously, you know, you mentioned Juan Thornhill, he was hurt last year, but they need to get more out of him. And Rodney McLeod is older. So this feels like one of those positions where they kind of ran it back a little bit, but got a little bit older. Grant was awesome. I think you have to feel really good about that. I see what Ashley sees here, Mary Kay. I don't know that I would put this group on my list just because I got to see Juan Thornhill do it. But the potential is there for this to be a strength for this team. And you could argue it was a strength for this team a year ago for the most part.
Absolutely. And I also like the fact that it's giving us an opportunity to talk about some different positions too, because sometimes we have a tendency to just fall into our little comfort zone with who we're talking about and what we're talking about. So I like the fact that we're talking about safety because we haven't really spent a whole bunch of time on it. And I really do think that the opportunity is there for these guys to step it up a notch. And one thing that they all have to do is get more takeaways. That's so vitally important from this group. They need to be those enforcers in the middle of the field, roaming the middle and punching the ball out and grabbing interceptions. And I think that's where this group can make their hay. They need to do that. And Juan Thornhill, he's got some history of interceptions. Grant has a nose for the ball. And I think those younger guys do too. So that's where they have to pick it up a notch this year. Now, of course, not going to get any easier when you have the lineup of quarterbacks they will be playing this year. And I wrote about it yesterday and kind of mentioned again all these different amazing quarterbacks that they are going to be playing this year. So this group is going to have to step it up from not only just their own standpoint, but also from the standpoint of who they will be facing this year and how much more difficult it's going to be. So time for those guys to show us what they've got.
Yeah, I think in the secondary as a whole, I have more questions about the safety position than the cornerback position. But the flip side of that, Mary Kay, is what you were just talking about. How many more times can we talk about how much we like Martin Emerson? I mean, you know, we could do a pod every day about that, the cornerback room. So I think for this secondary to kind of reach its full peak, it needs to sort of be at that expectation that I think you have it at, Ashley, where it can be one of the strongest groups on this team.
Yeah, I think too, for me, I looked at it, I'm like, well, there's no room, at least right now. And I hear you, Dan, about they're a year older. Maybe I'm also just burned because 2 years ago I took the corners and remember we did our position group draft and I did not hear the end of it from listeners when I took them. So they have to prove it to me every year from now on. I'm not just giving them a pass, but I really do like this group of safeties. I know Rodney's a year older. I do think though, for me, I mean, you can stick him out there if he's healthy, right? But I think those guys that know the intangible guys to me in this scheme really do still matter a lot. So I don't mind that they brought him back. And yeah, a lot of it hangs on Grant Delpit, but I just look at that room and I'm like, okay, you had one guy with a lingering calf injury, one guy, and then two guys with freak injuries. I mean, knock on wood, what are the odds that happens again? They were producing before that. So I'm a fan of this room, and I'm going to stick to it. I like the different conversation.
Okay, fair enough. It would be really easy to just say edge rusher here, but I'm going to go the other side. And I still feel really good about this offensive line. It's hard for me to really waver on this line. And, you know, I think obviously the interior is fantastic with Posick and Joel Bitonio and Wyatt Teller. That's probably among the three of the best interior guys in the league. I don't know where exactly they would rank, but they've got to be up there. Tackle. We've talked about this. You've got three guys for two spots. There's injury questions. That would be the one thing that would give me pause, but to me, if you've got some combination of Jack Conklin and DeJuan Jones and then Jed Wills, who's the biggest question mark on the line, which, you know, that's fine. He's playing out his fifth year option. He's had some ups and downs, but I think we've seen him make progress. I feel really good about this line still. So to me, Mary Kay, it's just a question of who's going to start a tackle. And I think with any three of those guys, even if your answer is Jed Wills and Jack Conklin or Jed Wills and DeJuan Jones as your tackles, I just feel really good about this group still. And I think they're still one of the best units in the league when they're healthy, which is also a question mark with this group right now.
Yeah, we don't know exactly when all those guys are going to be 100%. We do know that there are three guys coming off of season-ending knee injuries. And so I think that lends itself to some question marks. But they should be healthy, I would think, by the start of the season, or pretty close to that. So we'll have to see how that goes. I think that's the only thing that puts a little question mark next to it. But for the most part, the Browns are always going to be very solid across the defensive line and solid across the offensive line. They will always add to the pile. They will always be stout. They will always be snobs. And I think that they know that they have to keep their quarterback upright as much as possible. Always going to be hard to do when you have a guy that's going to run around and try to make plays all over the place. But I do think that if all three of those tackles are back healthy, this could shape up once again to be maybe, I would say, in the top three in the NFL of quality offensive lines.
Yeah, I mean, I almost feel like, you know, a couple years ago in 2020, they were getting all sorts of shine. You know, they were, everybody loved this offensive line. And, they went into like the next year. It was the Eagles and the Browns, right? Those were the two offensive lines everybody talked about. And I think for whatever reason, they've become a little bit forgotten in the national conscience. But Ashley, I still think this group is as solid as it comes. And again, it just starts for me in that middle, in that interior. And when we talk about the importance of pressure up the middle, well, you've got to have a strong interior to deal with that. And the Browns have a pretty good starting point there.
I think the offensive line last year is a big reason why they were able to figure out a way. I know the run game last year wasn't ideal for a lot of fans, but that offensive line is why they were able to cobble something together that still worked without Nick Chubb. And especially having to go out, get Kareem Hunt, get him here in the middle of the season, essentially, or at the beginning of the season. But you know what I mean? He didn't have a training camp or a ramp up or anything like that. And they still got things done on the ground. And I know we've heard Andrew Berry talk about that. He essentially said at the combine, we've talked about that quote about, you know, a star running back is one thing, but for the most part now in the league, so much of your run game is dictated by your offensive line. And yeah, I mean, I still think Joel Bitonio and Wyatt Teller, those are two of the best pulling guards you're going to have in the group there. Each of them for me is still good for like one or two plays a year that are just going to go viral on Twitter because Wyatt's running 20 yards across the field and just pancakes somebody or something like that. I do think as a unit, it still is a really solid, sturdy group. And I also think that's why when we talk about Bill Callahan leaving, and there was a lot of catastrophizing that. Trust me, Bill Callahan's a great coach, but I think this unit is going to be fine. Like, they know what they're doing together at this point, and they've been together for a while, the core of this line.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to go to the other side and talk about the positions that we're least comfortable with here after the draft.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Back on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, Dan Lobby, Mary Kay Cabot, Ashley Bastock. Okay, so now we talked about the positions we're most comfortable with, and we certainly left some out. I think, you know, like I said, we didn't talk about corners. We didn't talk about edge rush. I don't know, maybe those guys will come up. I don't think corners will come up in this part of the discussion. But Mary Kay, what's number one on your list? What are you most concerned about here after the draft?
You know, I even hate to bring this up because, once again, it feels like beating a dead horse, and we talk about it so much. So maybe we don't have to spend too much time on it, but I just can't think of anything else that I'd rather say here than being somewhat concerned about the quarterback position and not knowing.
Somebody was going to say it. If you weren't going to say it, I was. Right? Maybe Ashley was too.
So just not being 100% certain about how Deshaun Watson is going to come back from a shoulder surgery that football players don't usually suffer. I have been assured by a number of people, including a orthopedic surgeon friend of mine who has worked for an NFL team before, and he has said that it's much better for him to be coming back from this injury, the fractured glenoid bone, and the corresponding partially torn labrum, than it would have been if he had torn his rotator cuff. He said this is an injury that should be a really solid repair, and he should be totally fine. So if it goes like that, and I know the Browns 100% believe it's going to go like that, then maybe there won't be any concern about the quarterback position. But as we have mentioned before, not only as a quarterback do you have to worry about your throwing motion and all of those kinds of things, but you have to worry about the violent car accidents that you're going to get into on the field 6 times a game. So that is my concern. Just how is the shoulder going to hold up under all of this duress? And how is he going to come back from this? And then you factor in that he is trying to come back in 2024 for his first full season since 2020. And I don't know how people couldn't have some concern about this, because there's just no roadmap. There's no blueprint for this. There's no precedent for this. So that's it. I know we've talked about it a million times, but I guess it bears repeating here.
And I've mentioned this in passing in maybe a newsletter or something somewhere. I don't remember. But we talked about the Deshaun Watson trade on the podcast after Saturday's day of the draft. And it's just a little jarring that here we are, you know, so many years into this trade, and one of the biggest question marks on this team is still, unfortunately, the quarterback position. It's for injury reasons, but you know, I could even look at that entire room, and I think what they've done in that room, like, they've given themselves some wiggle room, right? If Deshaun's not ready, or if he does get hurt again, you have a plan at backup. You brought in a veteran in Tyler Huntley as sort of another plan as a backup. So the pecking order in the room is pretty clear, but if we want to go even a little deeper, I'm not 100% certain that if Jameis Winston had to start 14 games, the Browns would make the playoffs. I think he's a better quarterback and a smarter quarterback than he was in Tampa, probably. And we've seen Kevin Stefanski be able to minimize guys who turn the ball over a lot and help them succeed in his scheme. But it kind of all is about Deshaun Watson. But Ashley, even that room as a whole, I don't know. I don't know what happens if Jameis has to start a bunch, or Tyler Huntley, or Dorian Thompson Robinson has to start a bunch. I think it's fair to say this is still a question.
Yeah, I mean, Dorian even had his hip injury last year. Obviously, when he got his starts, things didn't go so well. I mean, Jameis, like you said, Dan, known for those interceptions, I mean, especially throughout his time in Tampa, and maybe Kevin Stefanski would be able to tone that down. But yeah, it's the depth of the room, and then obviously the big obvious question with light up red arrows pointing at it is Deshaun Watson's shoulder. And so much of this team hinges on, pun intended, that shoulder, that joint in the starting quarterback's body. That is what so much of what happens in 2024 is going to be dictated by. And it's tough. It's a tough position to be in, largely because everyone knows, like Mary Kay said, there is no comp for this. They can't look and say, oh, well, this quarterback went through it 5 years ago and he was fine. No, that person, to our knowledge, does not exist. So that makes it that much harder and that many more questions.
I think it should also be mentioned here, and I kind of reported this a couple of days ago, that there was some thought that Dorian Thompson Robinson might not be able to participate in OTAs or the minicamp or anything like that because he was coming back from this hip injury. But he has turned the corner to the point where he should be able to do some things in these spring practices and the minicamp and then definitely during training camp. So I think that's significant too, because it enabled them to not bring in another quarterback in the draft. And they looked at some and they thought about drafting one late, and they felt like they didn't need to do that because they were not going to be able to have reps for that young player. So we'll see how that turns out. I still think it might have been a good idea to add that player, but they didn't feel the need to do it, largely because Dorian is in better shape than they thought.
All right, Ashley, what position are you concerned about right now?
There were a few I'm picking up for this, but largely the one I'm picking is because it sounds, Dan has mentioned it twice, and we're going to be able to disagree on this a little bit. So I do think edge rusher is an interesting conversation to have. I think in the NFL, we've talked about the risks of running it back. They are essentially doing that here. And we look at last year, and yes, Myles Garrett won the Defensive Player of the Year award, but he also really tapered off with his sacks. The sack production went away, which is a trend that we've seen with Myles throughout his career. And I know some people think it's sacrilegious to talk about that, but it's worth mentioning because this year there wasn't a super obvious thing that caused it. You know, the shoulder may have been bothering him more than he let on. We've talked about that. But he hasn't used that fully as an excuse, so I don't think we can either. Obo Okoronkwo got hurt. He had, what, 5.5 sacks? Am I remembering that number correctly, Mary Kay? Was it 5.5 for Obo?
Or he had, four, I think he had,
D had 5.5. So, okay, yes. Those two guys essentially combined for 10 sacks, but you were hoping that they would both be pushing into the double digits for you. And I just think with the D-line, we saw enough times last year, the wild card game, the Denver game, the Rams game, where they could not get sacks. We know Jim Schwartz chewed them out after that long road trip for not being able to get sacks. They really struggled to get to opposing quarterbacks outside of Myles Garrett. And even he started to struggle getting to opposing quarterbacks. So I get it. Again, the D-line is fairly crowded right now, but I do still think it wouldn't have hurt for them to chase a bigger name in free agency here, especially. I don't know who that guy would be. Maybe something will materialize. We know they didn't trade for Za'Darius Smith until Friday in May last year, but it doesn't feel like it. It feels like they feel like they're set. And I am concerned, given a handful of things we saw when they had to face savvier play callers and savvier quarterbacks and how they struggled to get to them and what those reasons were. And now we're essentially running it back.
Okay, so I was saying edge rusher could be a strength.
But I legit think you can make an argument for this position group as a strength or a concern right now.
Yeah, and listen, there are already podcasts in our feed where I'm talking about, like, are we sure Za'Darius Smith is going to be as productive a year older? So I see where you're coming from. I still feel good about this edge rush, though, Mary Kay. With, you know, obviously Myles starts it. I feel like Z, you know, here's that pressure for sack. You know, this is the Ben Bloom putting his arms out and saying this much at that press conference. I do feel like Z was getting into the backfield a fair amount last year and at least was affecting the quarterback. Now, I would like to see those sack numbers be higher, but I do think he was affecting the quarterback. I think Obo, who I was a little bit unsure about just because that was a flyer on a guy that had a big second half, I thought he lived up to what they expected him to be. And Alex Wright took a step forward, which I was not ready for. But if he could continue to develop, that gives you at least four guys who can get in the backfield and affect the quarterback. Now, Ashley's points are right. I mean, they did tail off in the second half, and they didn't, you know, that Houston game, it just felt like there was almost no pressure at all, especially in the first half. So they've got to be better. I just still feel okay overall about this group. And I fully acknowledge that there have been and there will be pods where I'm sitting here saying, are we sure about Za'Darius? But I still overall feel good about this group.
This is a spot where I would have added another proven double-digit sacker. I would have done it. I would have looked around in free agency. I would have paid for it. I still think that it's necessary. But they don't think that. They feel like they're getting enough disruption and production with what they have. So we'll see. I do think Z is going to need to make sure that he's operating at the level that he did last year, because he, for the most part, did what he was expected to do, except for the sort of little bit of a dry run early on, but the lights kind of came on for him in this scheme as time went on. Oboe missed the final four games or something like that until he stepped in the season finale to kind of get warmed up for the playoffs with a torn pec. So he had 4.5 sacks, but I think he was capable of at least the 6 that you would have wanted him to have, maybe a little bit more than that had he not missed that time. As you mentioned, Alex Wright did step it up. And then now that you have sacking interior guys, or at least one proven interior sacker in Quentin Jefferson, that some of those might come from there. So they should be okay, but I still would have gone out and probably spend some money on that guy, or maybe even drafted one fairly high. There must not have been one that they really felt good about on day two of the draft. Otherwise, they might have pulled the trigger on one. But I do think that you can never have too many guys that can actually get the quarterback on the ground.
Yeah, and, you know, look, especially in Jim Schwartz, this is sort of like cornerbacks, right? You can never have too many cornerbacks. Jim Schwartz loves to do the line changes and keep guys fresh and all of that. So I am a little surprised they haven't added more there, but I still feel okay about this group. All right. Would we rather talk running back or linebacker?
Let's talk linebacker.
I feel like we haven't talked linebacker.
Let's talk linebacker.
So, I like the idea of more JOK as long as he's healthy. He's a Pro Bowl guy. Jordan Hicks is a good player, a veteran. They needed to add that. But he is older than Sione Takitaki and Anthony Walker. I think losing Sione Takitaki hurts. I was really hopeful they'd be able to re-sign him, but he ends up going to New England. And then after that, you're looking at, you know, you're kind of hoping to capture some magic with Devin Bush making a comeback. You've got Nathaniel Watson, who you just drafted. You have Tony Fields, who has played a little bit for you at linebacker, but has mostly been a special teamer in his career. I still feel like this group is a little bit thin. Maybe I'm forgetting a name, too. I don't have the roster up in front of me. But I still feel like this group is a little thin, Mary Kay. And maybe that's okay because Jim Schwartz's defense sort of isn't dependent on linebackers. But they're kind of counting on some things, right? They're counting on Jordan Hicks to stay healthy and, you know, getting close to his mid-30s. They're counting on Devin Bush to play sort of like he hasn't played since he was with the Steelers, and maybe putting a lot on Tony Fields and Nathaniel Watson. I'm just a little unsure about this group as a whole outside of JOK.
Well, it's definitely worth discussing. I think we really did see the lights come on last year for JOK. I think he put some of his weight back on. I think he was more engaged, and I think he flourished in Jim Schwartz's scheme, and I do think that he will continue to grow in it. So we might even see a Pro Bowl caliber year out of him this year. So I think that's good. And then with those two veteran guys that they added, Jordan Hicks, I think that's a good, solid pickup. And I think he will do a really nice job in there. And then Devin Bush, I don't think they're expecting him to be the first round pick and the linebacker that he was in Pittsburgh. Off to a great start until he suffered the torn ACL against the Browns. But they're looking for a guy that can perhaps come in here and contribute in a meaningful way. So we'll have to see how that one goes. And then Nathaniel Watson, I mean, he might be able to get some things done in this defense, even in his first year, because he's supposed to kind of play the Sione Takitaki stout run defender role. The Mike guy, the real smart, cerebral linebacker who plays basically with a super high motor and apparently his hair on fire from what we are reading about and watching. So I think they're going to be okay there. But I do get where you're coming from, that another more name linebacker might have been something that a lot of people would have liked to see. But I do think, once again, as you mentioned, it's not a super premium position for them. And also, I do think that you're going to also be playing a number of the three safety looks. And when you do that, you don't need as many linebackers, or you don't need the caliber of linebacker that you necessarily do in some other defenses. So I think they've got enough bodies in there to be good. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll be okay. And it all sort of hinges, you know, JOK was healthy last year, like Mary Kay mentioned, put on that weight. And so it seems like his body can hold up now. You have to feel better about that. Jordan Hicks, I said mid-30s. That was a little unfair to him. He's going to be 32. So not quite mid-30s. Nathaniel Watson is interesting. He was a sixth-round pick. You don't want to count too much on a guy taken on day three, but he's going to be 24 years old here soon. Like I think September 1st is when he's going to be 24 years old. So I don't know. I feel like this is sort of – I don't know that there's a ton of development there for him. He's kind of going to be the player he is. So if anybody can hit the ground running, it's got to be him. Ashley, how do you feel about the linebackers?
I think I side more with Mary Kay here. Like, I understand your hesitancy about the room. I do think it's fair to be hesitant about, well, what would happen if JOK got hurt? Like, what would that room look like? What's playing time going to look like for all these guys? I do think would feel better about it if Sione Takitaki was still here, even though they think they kind of manufactured his replacement here potentially. But I think for me, it just comes back to, at the end of the day, it's not the most important position in this defense. I think they still have to be effective. They still have to be able to play downhill and react. But it's not that same kind of premium position that your pass rushers are going to be or that your DBs are going to be. So I think that I fall on the side of they're going to be okay. I get wanting more star power here and being a little wary just because of the injury history in the past with Jeremiah. But I think a lot of teams wish they had a JOK at the top of their linebacker room. So for me, that's a really good starting point.
And as we do this, you know, this is just another reminder to me that Browns fans should feel really good about this roster, because when we went through the positions we were most nervous about, or that, you know, we had questions about, you're looking at quarterback, that's an injury question. And then the other positions, we didn't get into running back, that's an injury one as well. But the other it's almost like nitpicking. We're talking about just adding pieces here or there. Your top end pieces are all there. And even, you know, even at safety, again, my concerns are more just nitpicking. So I think the bigger lesson here is Browns fans should still feel really good about this roster. And also, hey, it all comes down to the quarterback. Every single pod. We should just end every single pod. It all comes down to Deshaun Watson's health. So that's how we'll end this pod. Make sure you're subscribed to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave us nice reviews on Apple Podcasts. Like I said, Lance and Tim are going to break down the draft picks. Lance sent us Cliff's Notes on his draft analysis. And even for Cliff's Notes, they were pretty intense. So I'm excited to hear what Lance has to say about some of these picks. That'll be coming at some point on Friday. Become a Football Insider subscriber, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. And of course, find us on YouTube, Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com, and on Instagram, Orange Brown Talk. For Mary Kay and Ashley, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening, everybody.